As Tamar shared last week, my first choice for a dinner guest was Jesus, but she beat me to him. We'll still have Jesus in the mix today, though, but from the viewpoint of Mary Magdalene and what she learned firsthand from him. I use the name Jesus and Christ interchangeably, but rarely together. Christ means anointed one, and Jesus was his name. And the sources I used often used Christ to reference the man who led the first century movement. I was going to title this sermon, Mary Magdalene, Penitent Prostitute or First Apostle. Not because I think prostitutes need to be penitent, but because from the 6th century, when Pope Gregory of the Roman Catholic Church gave a homily calling her a repentant prostitute, until the Catholic Church quietly recanted that view in 1969 and recognized her as the Apostle of the Apostles, that is how she was regarded. There's no evidence she was ever a prostitute. She was conflated with other women of the Bible. Throughout medieval art, this is how she was portrayed, and she was long thought of as the patron saint of prostitutes and sinful women. According to Dr. Karen King, the reason for the popularity and longevity of the Pope's view of Mary as a prostitute was because it served the early church fathers. She wrote, "This fiction solved two problems at once by undermining both the teachings associated with Mary and women's capacity to take on leadership roles." Yet here I am. Outside of the Roman Catholic Church, Mary was more highly thought of, and in the Eastern Orthodox Church, she was always considered equal to the apostles. But the Gospel according to Mary was still erased and not a part of any Christian Bible. The Gospel of Mary is an ancient text written in possibly the late 1st century or early 2nd century and was not included in the Bible. Mary of Magdala of the canonized Bible is first mentioned in the book of Luke as one from whom 7 demons came out. Magdala is a small fishing town on the western shore of the Sea of Galilee in modern-day Israel. She was a figure in the Bible that I had always thought of, if I thought of her at all, as a possessed woman with a shameful past who, once she met Jesus, was forgiven and exorcised. You know, like exorcism. A woman I could relate to, but did not consider much. I don't think I was ever demon possessed, anyway. I had a shame. I may have had a shameful past. But what I found recently, though, is that she was the most prominent woman of the New Testament, second only to Mary, the mother of Jesus. She has her own following, and thousands make pilgrimages to Magdala in Israel, are places where it's believed she spent her last days. After the demons left, Mary traveled with Jesus, the 12, and the other disciples, men and women. There may have been as many as 70 people who followed Jesus during his ministry on earth. And Mary was one who supported this ministry financially out of her own means. She was Jesus' closest companion, stayed with Jesus as he died on the cross, sought to anoint him for burial, was the first witness to the empty tomb, and the first to see the resurrected Christ, or a vision of the risen Christ, who then sent her to tell the others. Apostle means one who is sent, and that is why we call her the first apostle, or apostle to the apostles. The Gospel of Philip, another letter written left out of the canon of Scripture, says she was the one most loved by Jesus, and he often kissed her on the mouth. This may have been a first century custom, so we don't have to read too much into that, but others have. It's rumored by some that Jesus and Mary were married and had children. Since the Roman Catholic Church was organized in the 4th century, she was not considered more than a repentant sinner and follower of Christ. The final version of the Bible was not canonized in the West until the 6th or 7th century, but from the 4th century on, there was a tradition and a creed. Before the 4th century, however, Mary's Gospel, an anonymous letter that circulated in the 2nd century, was part of the Gnostic tradition, along with other letters and gospels. The word Gnostic comes from the Greek word gnosis, and simply means to know, or having an inner knowing. The Gnostics were those who claimed experiential secret knowledge and did not consider Jesus divine. A Coptic translation of Mary's gospel was discovered in an Egyptian marketplace in 1896. Two other fragments of the gospel, written in Greek, were found in 1897 and 1906. According to Megan Watterson, who wrote the book Mary Magdalene Revealed, finding three copies in different locations indicates that it was circulated widely and was the equivalent of a New York Times bestseller. But why was it and other writings buried or hidden, and why were they never included in the canon of scripture? Well, I'll tell you. Emperor Constantine of the Roman Empire converted to Christianity in the year 312. And he and his co-emperor Licinius issued the Edict of Milan in 313, which made Christianity legal. After more than 200 years of persecution, Christ's followers, who refused to regard Caesar as divine, were free to worship the way they wanted. The Council of Nicaea convened under Constantine in the year 325. The first order of business was to decide on a standardized Christian dogma to settle questions around the nature of Jesus, his divinity, the Trinity, and the date of Easter. One truth to live by and rule by, and the Nicene Creed, which is still recited all over the world, came to be. Later councils authorized the books to be included in the canon of scripture. Those who hold that the canon was already in practice and simply confirmed at these councils miss the point that when Constantine converted, he was one of the most powerful men in the world and may have wanted to keep his power intact through dictate, not love. Constantine's impetus for conversion was a dream he had about the cross being the symbol under which he rode into battle, not the peace-loving teachings of Jesus that we learned about last week. Megan Watterson explains that to maintain this creed, the four gospels that were chosen for the canon of the New Testament need have no rivals. So then, gospels that existed for almost three centuries as scripture sacred to the early Christ movement, the Gospel of Mary, Thomas, and Philip, the Acts of Thecla and Paul, the Thunder, Perfect Mind, suddenly became a threat to the budding institution of the church. In the year 367, Bishop Athanasius of Alexandria ordered that the monks destroy all the writings not specifically designated as canonical. So what does the gospel according to Mary say, and why was it so scandalous? This is where we become a fly on the wall at what may have been a dinner party conversation with Jesus, or a vision of Jesus, and Mary and the disciples, Andrew, Peter, and Levi, and probably others. The discussion probably took place shortly after Jesus died and rose and was at some point transcribed, undersigned the gospel according to Mary, then distributed far and wide. We arrive late to the party. The first six pages of our gospel are missing. And we take a break in the middle as four more pages are missing. So we're not privy to the full discussion. There is much to glean from what we hear, and I will only give a few highlights. At this gathering, Jesus answered a question from Peter asking, "What is the sin of the world?" And Jesus said, "There is no such thing as sin. Rather, you yourselves are what produces sin when you act in accordance with the nature of adultery, which is called sin. For this reason, the good came among you. It acts together with the nature of your root so as to reunite it with your root." Adultery here means divided from your true nature or being unfaithful to your true self, your root. And the good, with a capital G, is how Mary refers to God or the divine, which is a part of everyone. Jesus seems to be saying that he came to show us the way back to our true selves. The teacher, Jesus, after answering a few more questions, then leaves. Many of the disciples are distraught and afraid of the persecution, or afraid of persecution, but it is written that Mary arose to comfort them. Peter said to Mary, "Sister, we know that the teacher loved you differently from other women. Tell us whatever you remember of any words he told you, which we have not heard." Mary says, "He is calling upon us to become fully human." Thus Mary turned their hearts toward the good. Then Mary relates a conversation with Jesus where she asks, "When we see a vision of you, is it with our souls or with our spirit?" Jesus answered, "It is neither the soul nor the spirit, but the nous between which the two sees the vision." In her book, Mary Magdalene Revealed, Megan Watterson explains that the word nous, N-O-U-S, is a Greek word that has been translated mind, but is better understood as the spiritual eye of the heart. It's the aspect of the soul that can be sensed and experienced while we're here, embodied. It's what the founders of Christian contemplative prayer, the Hesychasts, refer to as the soul's pilot. Mary continues relaying what Jesus said. "Where the nooses lies the treasure." She shares much more about how Jesus shows a path of the soul ascending to overcome various conditions, but it seems that our personal internal vision, our clear knowing, is what the good news is about. When Mary is finished speaking, Andrew says he does not believe that the teacher would speak like this. And Peter, the one who asked Mary to share this in the first place, says, "How is it possible that the teacher talked in this manner with a woman about secrets of which we ourselves are ignorant? Did he really choose her and prefer her to us?" This, by the way, is the man considered to be the rock upon which the church was built. Mary defends herself with tears and is hurt that Peter and Andrew would doubt her. And then Levi speaks up. "Peter, you have always been hot-tempered, and now we see you repudiating a woman just as our adversaries do. Yet, if the teacher held her worthy, who are we to reject her? Surely the teacher knew her very well, for he loved her more than us. Therefore, let us atone and become fully human so that the teacher can take root in us. Let us grow as he demanded of us, and walk forth to spread the gospel without trying to lay down any rules and laws other than those he witnessed." First century feminism. Jesus, even in the canonical Bible, was an all-out feminist. He communed with women, he talked with women, he taught women, and he let women teach. He let them into his inner circle of confidence and treated them as equals. And Mary Magdalene, well, she was his star student. She listened most intently, loved him most sacrificially, and taught others the way to become fully human. Megan Watterson puts it this way about Peter's accusations. "Maybe we are all Peter at times when we question how could we possibly deserve a love that's right here within us. Maybe Mary was more loved by Christ because she knows that she wasn't separate from his love in the first place. I think that is what was hidden that Mary revealed, that love is within us. We are love, and we don't have to earn or prove or deserve this fact. And if we can recognize that we've never been separate from it and bring it forth outside of us, this is what saves us." Outside of the four Gospels in the canonized Bible, Mary Magdalene is not mentioned again. She was effectively erased along with all the Gospels that were considered Gnostic or apocryphal. Apocryphal, by the way, means of doubtful authenticity. But her legend lives on. The Eastern Christian tradition says that she traveled with the Apostle John and the mother of Jesus evangelizing in Ephesus in Turkey and died there some years later. In the Western Church, despite the label of penitent prostitute, she became one of the most popular saints of the Middle Ages, maybe because of all us sinful women. It's rumored in these Western circles that approximately a decade after Jesus' crucifixion, Magdalene and her companions escaped persecution in Palestine by crossing the Mediterranean Sea in an unoared boat and landed on the coast of Provence in southern France. Provence, I don't know how to say that right. She brought the message of Christ to France. Then, as the legend goes, she spent 30 years in a cave in contemplative prayer, sustained by angels seven times a day. Thousands make pilgrimages to the town of Magdalene, Israel, to Ephesus to see the Magdalene relics, and to France to visit the cave, all to honor and pay homage to Mary Magdalene. And whether you believe her or not, whether you're a Christian or not, I think her life and legacy are worthy of attention. For me, she's become a symbol of the different ways the ancient Christian church and the original Christ followers lived and worshiped before the church was organized and dogmatized. There are many varied ways people understood who Jesus was and how his example was meant to influence us. Mary's gospel shows a way to find our true selves within our mind's eye without having to look outside of ourselves for affirmation and for goodness, or affirmation of our goodness. A mystical way, perhaps, but I've always been drawn to the mystical.